This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Shope went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I was taking a random picture, zoomed it in, and there it was. There was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange. The unsuspecting. The unexpected.
Johnny and Billy here, and we like to talk weird subjects. Weird to some, normal to others, whatever your definition is.
Just a state of mind.
Yes. Yeah, it sure is. UFOs, Sasquatch, conspiracies, near death. Ghosts, paranormal, all that good stuff. And on the phone, we have returning Michael W. Hall of the UFO I Team. Welcome back, sir.
Glad to be back with you guys.
You know, you've been on the show before. You've been to the UFO Paranormal Summit. Not everybody was able to go. Not everybody was able to hear our last episode with you guys on. Can you briefly explain what the UFO I Team is and does?
Well, yeah, definitely. First of all, let me explain. This is Michael W. Hall, who they are now calling the paranormal lawyer nowadays. So I kind of like that moniker. I think I'll keep it for a while. I am the founder and director of the UFO I Team, which is a pretty highly educated group of field investigators. You're talking PhD and master's level, and of course I've got my Juris Doctor myself, who are interested in the paranormal. UFOs, of course, unidentified aerial phenomena, as they like to call them nowadays. Bigfoots, cryptids of all sorts, and of course even ghosts. And, you know, we have been going to various hotspots around the Pacific Northwest and investigating the sighting reports that have come to us through many times through Peter Davenport's National UFO Reporting Center. And I have actually been Peter's attorney for the last 24 years, you know, doing some of his legal work that needs to be done. And believe it or not, you wouldn't believe the legal work that paranormal organizations like the National UFO Reporting Center and NARCAP, MUFON, APRO, and all those others typically need during the year and through the year. So I've been fortunate enough to be able to, for the last 30 years, basically, help these organizations with any legal work or issues that come up. So I've been enjoying that as a career. And now that I'm semi-retired and get to pick and choose who I work for and work with, I am really enjoying getting into the details of what the heck is going on right now with this slow rollout of disclosure that's going on regarding the truth of the paranormal, of UFOs, and generally of consciousness being raised around the globe.
So what's been going on?
You know, ever since the New York Times article last December This is not even a year ago, by the way. People kind of forget, but December 16th, 2017, on the front page above the fold on the New York Times was an article that was interviewing the Department of Defense officials, the Pentagon officers that were in charge of an actual program to investigate unidentified aerial phenomena. So, for the first time in history, there was actual government confirmation of the existence of UFOs. Ever since then, the UFOI team and myself have been busy because it seems like people now have kind of been vindicated and been able to say, well, I told you all along, and now they're more than willing to talk to people, serious-minded individuals like ourselves, who really go out and want to know, you know, what is happening, you know, in around the area. Peter Davenport, of course, from the National UFO Reporting Center, for the last, 40 years, have been gathering this material from all across the country and different parts of the world. But Peter is telling me the last 2 years, things have skyrocketed as far as reports go. Even, by the way, Johnny and Billy, the reports of alien entities on the ground in Oregon, let's put it that way, very close to us and all around the country.
So there's aliens walking around, or what?
There sure seems to be. let me just tell you one of the stories from Newburgh, Oregon. This would have been in September, by the way, not that far long ago. A gentleman was driving to work on a two-lane country road about 6:45 a.m. in the morning. And he was a little sleepy, but, you know, still awake and driving down the road there. And he noticed that on the opposite side of the road that he is driving, but walking in the same direction that he is, his travel was going, were two very tall figures just walking along the berm of the road. By the way, he says there are no sidewalks on this country road, and he hardly ever sees anyone walking on this highway. So as he's going closer to these two figures, he notices that they are about in between 6.5 and 7 feet tall, he estimates. They are wearing skin-tight, silverish kinds of clothing with knee-high black boots on. Both of them dress the same, and they both have green vests on. And
very
they're kind of walking strangely, not like a normal human gait, which caused him a little trepidation at that point. So he slowed down just a hair, and he decides to take a closer look at these two as he passes them. He mentions that he was not going to stop and asked if they needed a ride. But he did slow down, and as he got abreast to them, he turned to his left to try to take a good look at their faces. And simultaneously, both of them, as he came by, turned their heads away from him. So he could not see their faces. He did notice they had longish-type hair. Didn't seem to see anything on their heads as far as hats or helmets or anything like that. He thought it was strange enough that he just kept going and then eventually reported it to the National UFO Reporting Center. That was a sighting that happened just 7 days after another sighting in Oregon of an extraterrestrial, supposedly, or a strange entity walking in the woods not 75 miles away from Newburgh, Oregon. So there you go. That's some of the new weird stuff that's going on right here in relatively our neck of the woods.
Wow.
That's pretty interesting. You know, when you hear about things happening in a certain area and it happens over and over, I mean, there has to be some credibility there. You know, people don't make up that many stories.
Yeah, and you know, Billy Peter Davenport kind of culls through, you know, some of the sighting reports that are called in as jokes and hoaxes and those kinds of things. And
yeah.
He typically will interview or at least talk with the witness in person if he believes it's a fantastical report, just to find out if it's a serious-minded individual and whether the report is bogus or not. And Peter would not post these things. If you guys know Peter Davenport, he's a very serious researcher himself. And he believed that this report and the previous one that came from Oregon from a different sighting report were quite serious when they said these things.
Yeah, you know, when you talk to a person, like face-to-face or on the phone, you kind of get a gist of where they're coming from, and when they reenact what they've experienced, you know, if they've really experienced it, most of them, it's almost like they relive that experience, whether they're afraid or just excited, but when they're lying, you know, and you being an attorney and having probably been around people that haven't been truthful, like being in the court system, you've probably experienced all sorts, you've probably seen it all, right?
Well, exactly, Johnny. You know, that's why, you know, the firsthand testimony of a witness is so credible in a court. Obviously, the judge puts them under oath. They are cross-examined by either the prosecutor or the defense attorney or the plaintiff's attorney. And that's exactly where their veracity is weighed by the jury, by the trier of fact. And it's very important. I don't know how many cases I've been involved with where the story or the version of events were fantastical, but the witness's sincerity and veracity was in such a such that people could not disbelieve them. Let's put it that way. And that, by the way, is kind of interesting. When you actually come to firsthand knowledge and witness testimony, let me tell both of you guys of one of the strange things that I've come across as the old paranormal lawyer in digging up cases, case law, actually, that deals with the paranormal. Actually, out of the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, this is a district court out there, at the turn of the century, about 1908, there was the very first recorded case in history where a convicted murderer was sent to his death by the testimony of a ghost.
Wow.
You want to hear that story?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I just, when I ran across this story, I'm going, you got to be kidding me. No, this was a fantastic idea where this young woman, I believe she was in her 20s or even maybe in her teens, was murdered. Nowhere to be found. No one even could find her body. But the circumstances on which she disappeared led everyone to believe that a potential person in the community who was known to harass her might have been the person who killed her. No evidence at all, no body. And so the case kind of drug on and drug on, and the police didn't have much to go on. What happened was eventually the girl's mother, in her sleep, by the way, says that she had this dream where her daughter's ghost came to her in the middle of the night and told her the whole details of how she was murdered, who did it, and where the body was held, and different details of the murder that would have been unmistakable if proven.
Wow.
And so sure enough, the mother gets a hold of the local authorities and relays this story. They probably for a while didn't even want to pursue something like that, but one of them decided to go and get get some investigation going, one of the detectives, and they found actually exactly where the mother said the body was, and exactly how the murder was committed, and the details of the condition of the body when it was found. And of course, they immediately arrested the alleged perpetrator and had a trial. And of course, you know, when someone reports details of crime like that, of course, the mother becomes a little bit of a suspect herself, knowing all these details that have come true. But she had an ironclad alibi. So now the witness, or the actual perpetrator, was the guy on trial. The jury that was selected in this matter, of course, you realize that juries are selected in front of both of the attorneys. The defense attorney and the prosecuting attorney has a chance to interview witnesses before they are picked for a jury pool, jury trial, and they are kind of you know, asked whether they believe in ghosts, whether they you know, would be fair in a case like this. So it just goes to show you that the jury who was actually picked for this trial wasn't just a bunch of folks who, you know, were ghost believers. Most of them, I would imagine, had been interviewed about the whole process and were able to say that they'd be willing to make an informed decision, you know, based upon the facts. And that's kind of key right here, because the facts during the trial were all based upon the testimony of the mother, who is relating the information from her ghost daughter. And this gentleman was convicted, tried and convicted, and sent to his death on the testimony of a young teenage ghost.
Wow.
Was it the person that they thought it was?
Yeah, it was the person that they suspected but had no proof.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff out there. Of course, you know, the latest one, which I just thought was fantastic, was this local inmate in one of the prisons, and I can't remember if this was the Midwest or not, but he started a class action lawsuit with the rest of his inmates in his local prison to sue Satan for making them do their dirty deeds.
Wow.
How far did he get with that?
Well, good question, Billy, because I'll tell you what, he might have gotten a lot farther than people would have imagined, but I thought the judge in this matter, where he filed the case, I believe it was in Superior Court, had a pretty good sense of humor, because this judge said, seriously, he said, you know, this case might have merit. Not saying whether there is or is not a devil, but the petitioner in this matter has failed to give us an accurate address for the devil so we can have him served.
Oh.
Now, that is some judicial, you know, humor that I thought was kind of interesting. Well, you always have to have proof of service, you know. Whenever you serve a contestant in a matter like that, so that's fascinating stuff. It's law 101, where you figure out how to get jurisdiction over someone.
Yeah,
I would imagine that he tried to figure out. Well, how about if I publish in the newspaper? I just love these kinds of paranormal legal things that people throw my way every once in a while, that I file away for times like this when we need to talk about strange, weird things, you know. But I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, and you know, the local investigations that we are having are. And I was with Grant Cameron this past weekend, the famous Canadian ufologist up at the Caribou Paracon. And he agrees with me is that things seem to be happening much faster and much more credibly in the last year or so, as far as sighting reports, even disclosure, you know, with Tom DeLonge's To the Stars Academy, All sorts of interesting things are happening right now. And I got to congratulate all of us, I believe, for being, I don't know, willing or smart enough to be born at this time during the evolution of our planet.
Yeah, it's really interesting. In fact, I was talking about this 20 years ago, about how we're entering a period of enlightenment where people will have better understanding of our relationship to the universe, our relationship to the spirit world, and that includes, you know, Bigfoot and UFOs and all the paranormal things. And, you know, I still believe that we are there, but it's going to take time, and there's also going to be some chaos along the way.
Bingo. Yeah, Billy. One of my my things that I talk about in my talks every once in a while when I give them is that, you know, I think the major fear of the deep state and the governmental authorities that know more what's going on than we do,
yeah,
is that they fear a giant blowback could be happening once the dominoes fall and disclosure at any kind of level happens, because once you start the disclosure process, you're not going to be able to stop the information from coming out. And people are going to go, well, you mean, well, first of all, how long have you known all of this? You know, whatever comes out, they're going to go, why didn't we know this 70 years ago or yeah, whatever? You know, all the technical advances that we could have enjoyed, maybe free energy or a very inexpensive energy, transportation issues that could be resolved so quickly. Why maybe my little Aunt Martha didn't have to die of cancer, you know, all sorts of kinds of things.
And right,
at one point there'll be this massive, I think, blowback that'll make the Nuremberg trials look like a cakewalk, you know, as far as who was involved and what they knew, when they knew it, and why they didn't share this information with the public.
We're talking with Michael W. Hall of the UFO I-Team, and coming up, more on disclosure, and maybe we can pick Michael's brain and share some experiences and some sightings with us coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
This is Derek Randles of the Olympic Project. If you have an interest in Sasquatch, the research we do, or upcoming expeditions, log on to OlympicProject.com. There, you'll find some of the data we've collected, photos from our trail cameras, audio analysis, and information about the Olympic Project. Learn about wilderness survival, research data collection, and some of the techniques we use in the field. Log on to OlympicProject.com.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and our guest today, returning, Michael W. Hall, the paranormal lawyer of the UFO I-Team. Now, you have all sorts of members of all walks of life and careers and educations.
Yes, we do, Johnny. You've met most of them last year at the Quinault Beach UFO Fest, and we had such a wonderful time down there with you and all the hundreds and hundreds. I tell you what, if people don't know, the Quinault Beach UFO Fest is the largest gathering of UFO and paranormal speakers and attendees in the entire state of Washington. So I would urge people to come again this year. I think, what is it, March 1st and 2nd coming up? Next year.
And you guys will be there, right?
Oh, we'll be there, definitely, with bells on. That'll be wonderful.
Now, do you guys do any kind of outings, things like that, where you take people out, you know, you
tour,
stargaze or anything like that?
Yes, we do. And thanks for giving us the plug there, Johnny. You know, actually at the Quinault Beach, you know, UFO Fest, we did hold Skywatch on Saturday night that was clear and crisp and pretty awesome out there right next to the hotel, next to the beach. It was just awesome. But if I can, if I have enough time here, I'd like to relate maybe a couple of local investigations that we did. The first one being at Mount Baker up in the northern part of the state of Washington, almost the Canadian border in a little ex-mining town called Glacier, Washington. This place, by the way, is if you went up I-5 north to Bellingham and then hung a right and went as far as possibly you could go on 542 east, you would run into a dead-end road at Glacier, Washington. And it's very high up in the foothills of Mount Baker. And, of course, Mount Baker has always been rumored to have amazing sighting reports of UFOs and, of course, Bigfoot and cryptids as well. So we took a summertime trip up to Mount Baker to film, by the way, a pitch pilot episode that the UFO I-Team is putting together for a reality television show of investigating UFOs around hotspots in various parts of the country. Matter of fact, I don't know if you remember the old Finding Bigfoot television series that Matt Moneymaker from BFRO was able to put together. They went 10 seasons and never found Bigfoot. And I'll tell you what, we can go almost any night of the week out there with a clear enough sky with our sophisticated camera gear, our infrared, our FLIR, our stop-action photography zoom lenses, and we can catch anomalous aerial activity almost any night of the week. So we are really looking forward to the possibility of putting together a serious-minded investigation show showing people exactly what's going on above their heads. Now, let me tell you two interesting facts that came from our investigation there at Mount Baker. The first one was that on a Friday night, Lee Strauss, our intrepid cameraman, who will literally climb to about 18,000 feet with camera gear strapped to his back just to get the video of clear night skies, he was out with his tripods and camera gear that one evening and noticed that in the stop action photography that he uses, which is kind of a unique trick, because what he will do is set up a camera on a tripod and have the aperture automatically open for 20 seconds, then it will close for 5 seconds, then it will open again for 20 seconds. He'll have that run for hours while he's doing other things with the other cameras. And when he reviewed the stop action footage that he got the night before on Friday night, he noticed that he saw a whole bunch of what initially looked to him to be shooting stars coming down from the sky in more of a vertical or slanted trajectory, and actually either disappearing behind Mount Baker or potentially even disappearing into the mountain. And when he looked at it and studied it more, he realized that there are no shooting stars going horizontally across the screen, and there are no shooting stars that just go vertically on the screen. They all seem to kind of have some kind of trajectory that heads towards the mountain for some reason and disappears at the mountain itself. So that kind of led us to believe, well, maybe these are not shooting stars. They are not necessarily burning out. They all seem to kind of streak and then keep streaking, and then the only way they disappear is they go behind the mountain or into the mountain. So that was a strange anomaly that we found on the first night there. The next night, we ran into a gentleman who lives in the area, and all we are able to use as his moniker is Rob from Puyallup. The gentleman lives there and doesn't want to be harassed, or he doesn't want to be famous at all, but he was willing to show us, to share with us his video footage that he takes on a very inexpensive, small little Nikon Coolpix camera that you could actually put in your purse. It's such a small, you know, thing. He sets it up on a tripod and will take short videos of about 5 minutes, maybe even 2 minutes long, during the actual daytime, of just pointing it up to the sky in the Mount Baker area. And then what he does, I don't know how he figured this out, but he takes his strip of footage, runs it through his very minimal laptop, by the way, and goes to a film editing program that he's downloaded for free. And he looks at his videotape frame by frame by frame. And what he showed us was unmistakably UFOs flitting in and out of these frames on these videos.
Wow.
Now, here's the interesting part of how he's finding these things. His Coolpix camera runs at about 49 frames per second. By the way, that's how video is put together. People don't understand that our videotape recorders are only doing stop-action photographs and stringing them together so quickly that they move. So his camera is just very minimal, goes to 49 frames per second. Lee Strauss's cameras that we use for the UFO I-Team, they'll go 120, 150 frames per second. So, but at 49 frames per second, he's showing us a craft, a very interesting thing that actually looks like a sphere in some cases, or looks like a rectangle, or even a triangle, appearing into the field of vision, maybe at the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. Then the very next frame, it would be somewhere towards the middle of the frame. And in the final frame of view, it's up on the upper left-hand corner, streaking out of the frame. So when he first saw that, he said, wow, that's interesting. I wonder how fast they're going. So when he calculated 49 frames per second times 60 seconds in a minute times 2 minutes for his length of the video, he's calculating that these craft, these anomalous things, are traveling at least 20,000 miles an hour.
Wow.
And they are obviously going too fast for you even to see them in daylight with your naked eye, if you were even looking at them. So he had multiple examples of these things flying through the sky and or coming up out of off the ground, basically, out of a field, and flying off into the mountain with the mountains and the foothills behind the craft, so that you could tell how far away it was as well, not only the speed but the distance of these things. At one point, he was filming the UFO I-Team as we were doing our pitch pilot episode, and he showed us craft that were zipping in and around the sky above our heads with us in the frame doing our thing down below. So that was a fascinating trip to Mount Baker, which we are just in the process of editing all of this stuff down so people can see it. By the way, if people want to witness exactly what I just described about Rob from Puyallup, they can go to our Facebook page at UFO I-Team with a lowercase I, and right at the top of the page I have pinned there Rob from Puyallup's videos of these craft flitting in and around the Mount Baker area.
Do you think there's a base in there, a UFO base in the mountain or anything like that?
You know, it sure seems to lend to that credence of the fact that if these things that look like they could be shooting stars are not shooting stars, and they seem to be going towards the mountain and disappearing behind the mountain or into the mountain itself, there's got to be something going on there.
There have been reports and native lore that there is an underwater UFO base right off of the coast here in Ocean Shores, Westport. Have you heard anything about that?
You know, I have heard that. And again, up on Catalina Island as well, or down there, you know, off the coast of California. So, you know, it would seem to me to be a natural way for any kind of visiting race, extraterrestrial race, to have a base under the water. Let's face it. Oh, by the way, let me explain this, and this would tie into exactly what you're talking about. Rob from Puyallup, up in Mount Baker, actually showed me footage of a UFO that he, of course, he puts his camera on a tripod and leaves it alone. So all he's doing is reviewing whatever is in the frame of view when he goes through these things frame by frame. But he showed me a craft that came down from the clear blue sky and entered into Silver Lake. Silver Lake is a beautiful resort community and lake up there close to Mount Baker. Went into the water without making a splash, by the way, because he was showing me this frame by frame. And then you could actually track this thing under the water, moving through the clear blue waters of Silver Lake. And then it popped up out of the water again and took off without making a splash, and, by the way, without slowing down in the water.
Wow.
So if they have perfected the idea of moving through the atmosphere without, you know, making a sonic boom, for instance, without disturbing the molecules around it or whatever they do to, you know, to fly, obviously they would have had the same ability to do this thing underwater as well. So why not, since the planet is, what, 75% water itself, why not have bases in the ocean, off the coast? Matter of fact, you know, the last To the Stars Academy, you know, disclosure of these gun camera footages from the F-A-18 fighter jets off of the Nimitz.
Oh, yeah.
That was off the coast of California. People remember this Tic Tac, you know, UFO that they were showing us on these gun camera footages. Moving from 80,000 feet in elevation down to the surface of the ocean in 5 seconds, you know, that kind of astronomical speeds and maneuverability. But they don't pick up on part of the testimony that the pilots were giving, that this small 40-foot size and diameter, potentially tic-tac UFO, was in reality hovering over a much larger, 150-foot in diameter, submerged disc under the water that was fomenting the surface of the ocean at the same time that they were filming the Tic Tac. So it kind of leads more evidence, credence to the fact that indeed there could be this underground base right off ocean shores. Maybe it's not too far from the spit. Who knows? I'll tell you a quick story about UFOs in the water. Just happened last week or the week before. I was on my way up to the to Canada in the middle of BC for the Caribou Paracon up there, and Lee Strauss, our intrepid photographer, calls me because he wasn't going to be able to make it to the conference. And I'm in Bellingham, fielding a phone call from him on my way up to Canada. And Lee is very excited to tell me that he just received a phone call about an hour before he called me, and it was about 10 in the morning when he called me, saying that he got a telephone call, a frantic call, from a woman that he had only met once before, but is the wife of a good friend of Lee Strauss's, who is a high-ranking Amazon.com executive. Matter of fact, he is a good friend of Jeff Bezos himself. And the wife was calling Lee because she had met him at a cocktail party and knew that he was interested in UFOs. She tells the story that just not only 5 hours before she called him, in the middle of the night at about 3 in the morning, her and her husband were sighting for 2 hours a circular craft that was hovering over the water from their Normandy Park, a very exclusive neighborhood in Seattle, house, and that they were able, through a telescope that they had in their front window, watch the multicolored lights going around and around the rim of this craft. She said she doesn't really, she says eventually the thing either disappeared or she got, just went back to bed, which is always a strange thing to think about when people see something like that and they decide, well, that's enough, they're going to go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it leads you to believe maybe something else happened there, you know, during that whole event. But she called Lee up and says, I think I have a message for you. And Lee says, for me, what do you mean? She says, yes, I was staring at this thing and staring at this thing, and I just got this overwhelming urge to give you a call. And the message seems to be, look north. That was the message.
Wow.
He said,
wow.
Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. What do you mean, look north? Does that mean me look north, you look north, or whatever? And she says, I believe the message was for you. Now, James would have Lee would have discounted that whole thing. But he remembered that at that very moment, that morning, that I was moving up north to go to Canada. So he calls me on the phone. He says, you're not going to believe this. This was a message, supposedly, from a craft. And she thought it was for me. I think it's for you. You're heading up to Canada to the Caribou Paracon. And he reminded me to look north during the whole event. I did, pretty much, most of the weekend that we were there. But the Saturday night that we had a sky watch with about 30 attendees out there, including Dave Scott, the radio show host up there from Spaced Out Radio, and Grant Cameron, the famous Canadian ufologist, we sighted, looking to the north, flashes in the high heavens. It's almost as if, not that a star would flash or twinkle, but in a field where there's just black, all of a sudden there'd be a flash. And I've seen this before a few times, but this was multiple flashes that all of us saw, including Dave Scott, Grant Cameron, and myself. And I'm just wondering, what the heck potentially do these flashes mean? Are they sending any information, downloads, or those kinds of things, wakening people up? I don't know. But that was a strange story. I just had to relate that one from the Caribou Paracon.
Wow.
That's a good story. It always amazes me how many, what I think are messages that we get, spiritual messages or messages from UFOs. Do you think there is a conscious connection with some of these UFOs?
Yes, exactly, Billy. I think that's the whole idea of what's going on here. Is that we are, as a human race, being dragged up to the level of consciousness that it's going to take to enter the galactic community out there. This Grant Cameron he's written many books on that whole idea of it's all consciousness. You know, what we believe is reality is not necessarily the truth, and we are all connected. Very simple, example is that, someone calls you on the phone and you just had the feeling that this was the person that you knew was going to give you a call. We seem to be connected somehow, all of us, whether we want to or not. And that's probably what we're going to learn about with all these quantum mechanics and non-local, realities.
Right.
Do you guys ever encounter many orbs? And if you do or don't, do you have any opinions or theories of what they are?
We definitely do, Johnny. Matter of fact, there is a woman who lives up at Mount Baker in this small little town of Glacier, Washington. We call her the Orb Lady. This woman will go out with her pretty nice cameras, her Nikons, and put them on a tripod, and she will turning her cameras on and catching multicolored, different sized orbs all the time. It's fascinating what you can get. And when you blow them up, there seems to be some kind of structures in these things, almost sometimes faces to look at. Just recently, Mount Adams, when we were there doing our sky watches down there at Eseti Ranch, that's E-C-E-T-I for anybody who wants to look it up, James Gilliland's wonderful place. You can go there and pretty much count on seeing anomalous aerial activity. Lee Strauss was standing next to his tripods when we were sky watching one night and swears that out of the blue, 5 feet from his ear, comes zipping a softball-sized orb right past his head. It caused him to duck and flinch. It was so close. He didn't see any, or didn't feel any rushing wind, but he definitely heard their, you know, got the presence of the thing as it zipped by him. So it seems to be go to hand in hand with UFO activity. Obviously, it's unidentified as well.
So how do I contact the UFO I team if I want to go on a skywatch, or if I have a sighting or some kind of experience I'd like you guys to check out? Or
oh yes, well we do live stream our Monday night meetings from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Facebook, UFO I team on Facebook, and we've got quite an extensive website up there that have a lot of our videos and, you know, investigations already up there. But they can always check our website at ufoiteam.com.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us today on Strange Harbor.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Johnny and Billy. This is awesome for me to be able to discuss these things with your vast audience out there, and I really appreciate it.
We will see you at the UFO Paranormal Summit in March, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much for the invite. We'll be there.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to listen to back episodes or contact us and yell at Billy for his new age TUI, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor.